Welcome to the Songs of Note podcast, where we talk about the songs we love and the stories behind them. I'm your host, Ryan Gregg.
Hello, and welcome to the Songs of Note podcast. This is a different episode than what we typically have. Typically, the show is where I interview people and we talk about music and albums and artists. This is a different one. This is going to be a solo one, so it's just me. So if you're like, oh, I'd rather not, no problem. Skip on. But if you're interested, here's what's happening. It's a Saturday morning. It's cloudy, raining all morning, but the rain has let up. My wife and kids have plans with another wife and kids of a friend, and so they are heading out for the whole morning. And my wife was like, "You're going to do what?" The thing that I was like, "Oh, I have some free time." I've always wanted to go visit Stevie Ray Vaughan's gravesite because it's like 40 minutes from my house and I live near Dallas. And I love Stevie Ray Vaughan's playing so much. And he's a Texan and he was a Texan and I'm a Texan. And I felt that bond. But as a guitar player, he just made a profound impact on me in the way that he played. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. I'll talk about that because it's just me. So here's the thing. Like, here's why I think this is a worthwhile trip. I think that musicians who you appreciate their work, if I can, I would certainly go visit places where memorable things were connected to them. And so the fact that his gravesite is within driving distance, I feel, well, gosh, his work meant so much to me. I want to go show my respect and go drive there and maybe put a pick on his gravestone. So that is the intent of this is, man, I really respect him, what he did with his work and his music. And it's also a chance to go on an adventure and see if we can find this. So we're heading out, starting the car. This is going to be a driving podcast for part of it. The destination is Laureland Funeral Home and Memorial Park in Dallas, Texas. 35-minute drive.
Starting route to Laureland Funeral Home and Laureland Memorial Park.
Here we go. All right, we are on the tollway, heading there. I was just thinking back to, you know, I probably talked about a lot of this, at least as far as personal experience, in an earlier episode of the podcast. So if you're interested in more on Stevie Ray Vaughan, we did an episode on his cover of Jimi Hendrix's Little Wing, if you want to go back. And I got to talk to a buddy of mine who is a guitar expert and talked all about his tone. And then my father-in-law used to go see Stevie play down in Lubbock, and so I talked to both of them on that episode if you haven't heard it. But for me, as a kid growing up in the Dallas area, there was just always Stevie was just always someone that you heard people talk about with reverence, like in awe maybe is a better word for it. So he passed away when I was just starting to play guitar. So I really wasn't fully into him or aware of him rather, when he passed away, except, you know, I was aware that it happened, but I didn't know his music at that point. And in the podcast episode about Little Wing, you know, that was really what I remember as being the song that I remember driving, with my mom in junior high, if I remember right. And it came on the radio and I was way into Jimi Hendrix. And then I heard Stevie's cover of Little Wing and just couldn't wrap my head around it as a new guitar player. And, you know, it can be really hard learning guitar and figuring out all the positions and your hands hurt. And you're like, man, I'm just trying to get this G chord to sound right. And then to hear somebody do what he did and just make it sound effortless. And it's one thing to make an instrument sound good, and it's another to make it sound like it's alive, like it's its own thing. And I think that there's certain players that do that. Stevie certainly does it for me. Coltrane, I mean, some of these guys that just they are it's like they are breathing through literally through the instrument, and it grabs you. And for someone to be able to play a, you know, piece of wood with strings or blow into a horn and have it move your spirit, I mean, that's a powerful thing, especially when there's no words. Like, I think one of the hardest things for me is to to connect to like instrumental music, like specifically like symphonies in Bach, and I really want to like it more than I do, but I really just connect with the songs that have singers and that have a story and that have a narrative. And so for me, to connect with somebody like Stevie because of it, because specifically of his playing, and then also like Coltrane, it just, I think it speaks to the, oh man, I'm going to use a big word, the lyricality, is that even a word, of their playing, meaning it's almost like singing. It's almost like singing the instrument, which sure sounds like a snobby music thing to say, but I think that's the best way to describe it. It's beautiful. And so, you know, Stevie was, you would hear people talk about having a run-in with him, or did you ever hear about Stevie? Or like I remember at the shop where I would get my guitar lessons growing up, the guy who fixed all the guitars, I was taking my guitar in. I think he was talking about something I don't remember what he was talking about, witch hazel for your fingers to feel better or something. And I was like, oh, I might have to try that. You know, I'm this seventh grade kid. And he's like, well, did you ever hear about Stevie Ray Vaughan's fingers? And I said, no. And I was like, what happened? And he said, his calluses were so thick because he used these thick, thick, thick strings. He used strings that I tried to put on my guitar, and it actually bent the guitar, bent the neck, because the strings were so taut and so thick. But he loved the tone that he would get with those thick strings. Anyway, so when you have those kind of thick strings, and then you're doing the bends, which is when you take a string and you pull it or push it, so the note goes from bah to bah, and you're like pulling it up, that hurts. But it sounds awesome if you do it right, and especially with Stevie's playing and with blues music. I mean, he's doing that constantly, and he's not only doing it, he's going for it. So guitar players, he's doing it, you know, he's doing a full bend down on like the second fret, which hurts, and then he's doing like a bend and a half up on like the 15th fret, which is when you hear like on Voodoo Child when it's like, he's, you know, wailing, that really hurts. And so the guy was like, Stevie Ray Vaughan would develop these monster calluses that helped him not, his fingers not hurt when he was playing. And then if the callus came off and he had a show, he would have to like super glue the callus back on. And if I remember right, this may not be right, I think he even sometimes would just flat out put super glue on the ends of his fingertips if he had to play and it hurt. And so that's some serious, serious playing, serious dedication to your tone. Because really, that's the reason you're doing it. It's for the tone of it. So I remember that. I remember, like, you know, getting my haircut at a place, you know, a few years ago, and the lady was talking about how she and Stevie used to hang out down in Austin, and he's just a figure that is kind of around the Dallas area. And so what I remember is watching, he did the Austin City Limits, and this would have been around 1980. And so it is a phenomenal performance. But if you're looking to like for an introduction to Stevie, I mean, I'd go Google that or find that on YouTube, and it's Austin City Limits, Stevie Ray Vaughan.
10 miles. Oh. Take the exit toward I-35 South.
Okay, we're gonna do it. And he is, at this point, he is very much, he's very popular, he's very much on drugs, and which is something he struggled with, and he is just white. He's white. He's so thin, and he's sweating profusely, and he looks unhealthy, but the playing is so good. It is so good. And he's sitting here playing, and he flips the guitar behind his back, and he plays with his teeth, and he plays behind his head. He has the playing chops, but then he has the showmanship, and the way that he does it in such a fluid manner, it felt so gosh, incredible for, you know, as a young guitar player trying to watch that and be like, wait, what? one move that he did that I tried in my room a bunch of times without success. He's singing at the mic and he's playing with his guitar. He spins around. While he's spinning, he unhooks the strap at the end of the guitar, and then by the time he spun back around to his microphone, he re-snaps the guitar strap onto the end of the guitar, and he finishes the song, mouth to the mic, guitar behind his back, so his left hand is outstretched. The strings of the guitar where he's playing are down by his lower back, and his right hand, he's strumming the guitar like near his lower back playing it, and he plays and he sounds, he still nails it. I couldn't play like that facing forward. It was incredible. Anyway, those are personal memories of what first got me into him, but you know, he grew up in the Dallas area. I'm just going to give you a brief rundown of him from what I remember. There's a couple really good books about him, and so this is more just going to be a real brief overview about him. But he grew up in Dallas, like in the 70s. His brother, who's named Jimmy Vaughn, whose name you might recognize, Jimmy was really the star guitar player. He was the older brother, and Stevie was the younger brother. And Stevie really learned so much from Jimmy. Jimmy was really the guy, like, forming bands and, you know, into all the cool music, and he's playing gigs. And his little brother starts, you know, coming around little Stevie, and he picks up the guitar and just practices endlessly and soon surpasses Jimmy in his playing. But Jimmy was really the one who kind of set the vision for, from what I can tell, like the idea of, let's, you know, I'm going to do a band, I'm going to perform, and this is what I'm going to do. So Stevie played in a bunch of bands, and fast forward to, he formed a band called Double Trouble, which is a great band name because it's Stevie and two other guys. And so he's playing gigs. And then in 1978, he played, I think it was 78, no, it was 82. He played the Montreux Jazz Festival, which was a big deal for a blues player to play. So, you know, the blues have been around forever, right? Forever, since, you know, early 1900s. And they've progressed along the way from, you know, from Robert Johnson, who is a, who spent time in Dallas as well. He, you know, he's one of the guys who helped make it famous. And so many of these guys along the way furthered the blues music and the blues craft. And so much of the blues is based around, you know, they would say telling the truth and being authentic. And blues forms, as far as song forms go, you would certainly recognize it. It's very often a set of chords that's going to be seventh chords, and it's going to be a dun 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 dun, you know, that kind of thing, and it's variations on that. And to, in some ways, it sets a framework that you can work within. In some ways, that's limiting, and in some ways, that can be freeing. And so, by the time you get to, Led Zeppelin would do old blues numbers, and then the Stones would turn blues numbers into like rock blues, and they just morph into like cooler and cooler, more modern versions of how they started, which would have just been on an acoustic guitar or something. And the songs morph into a more complex version of the blues, but still the blues. Like, even like, I mean, the Beatles are doing blues songs. Gosh, you could even say like, not Helter Skelter is really a blues song, but gosh, even that could be like it's a straight pattern that repeats that could even fit into that form. Some might argue against that, but that's just one example. But like, so Hendrix comes along, and Jimi Hendrix in the 60s, this would have been like 67, is when, you know, he had been playing for, I think it was Little Richard. He was the backing guitar player, but he kept, taking center stage and stealing the show a little bit. And if I remember right, Little Richard did not like that. So Hendrix was like, I'm going to start my own thing. And then he just blows up, and he takes the blues to a rock place that no one had ever taken it. And not only that, he took it into a skill level that for me, nobody has beat Jimi Hendrix as far as guitar players for where he has taken the sound and the scope of where you could take music. Like, nobody has beat that for me. But he was able to take blues and make it really interesting. So I was thinking about doing this trip yesterday, and so I was doing a little searching, like, you know, what did Stevie Ray Vaughan say about Jimi Hendrix? And I found a good little clip, and it was an interview, and Stevie had the Texas drawl, which, do I have the Texas drawl? Maybe. I remember us traveling one time, and somebody was like, "You sound like you're from Texas." And I said, "I do? I didn't think I sounded like that. But maybe I do." So anyway, Stevie's talking on this interview last night that I'm listening to. Certainly has a Texas twang. But he's talking about the blues and Jimi Hendrix, and he said the thing that Jimi brought was a complexity to the blues. And so he brought up specifically Manic Depression. And so if you know that Hendrix song, the thing that Stevie was pointing out is, like, he took what could be a really basic form, which is the blues, which is a straight pattern, and he made this killer guitar part that turns into like a rock riff. The guitar players, it's really fun to play if you've never played it. So it's like, I'm going to sing it because I can't play it because it's not a, don't have the rights to play that, but it's like, bah, bah, bah. And then the, you know, it kicks in and he starts singing Manic Depression, and the guitar part is like, so it's this really creative guitar part for what could have just been like strumming some chords. He made it, he took it to another level. Anyway, that was just one example, but Red House is another Jimmy song that Stevie would do. I think he did that one. Third Stone from the Sun is a Jimmy song that Stevie would do. And of course, Voodoo Child. So let's get back to Stevie. The thing that Jimi Hendrix did was he opened up the blues and opened up rock music to incorporate the blues into a much wider realm of possibilities. And so that, like I said, that was 60s, and then rock bands did that.
In 2 miles, take the exit toward I-35E South.
Okay, I will do. And so Stevie in the 80s comes along, and he takes what Jimmy did on a couple instances, right? So most of Hendrix's songs he wasn't all blues, but he certainly hit on the blues. And when he did the blues, he did them in a specific way. So what I think Stevie did, he harped in on... okay, the way that Hendrix played the blues on these couple songs, I'm also going to do that. I'm going to add my own style to it. But like, even stylistically, I think that's how you can almost look. It's almost like a handoff from Hendrix to Stevie on here's how you can make a blues song really, you know, rock. And Stevie certainly did that. We've got to check the map. We got 1 mile. We're 10 minutes out. And so Stevie would just wreck these songs. I mean, just destroy in the best way these blues songs. And so he just got better and better through the years. But like, back to his kind of overview of his life, as he goes and plays the Montreux Jazz
Continue
Festival.
Continue straight, then use the right lane to take the exit toward I-35E South.
It's like you're in the car with me. It's like you're in the car. So he plays it. This is 1982. David Bowie is there. David Bowie's like, holy cow, that guy's incredible. I want you to play on my album. So David Bowie, one of the biggest stars in the music world, has him come out, and he plays on his album, Let's Dance. And he tears it up.
Use the right lane to take the exit toward I-35E South.
And who was it? John Hammond, who was like a famous producer. He convinced another record label to pick him up. And anyway, they end up recording Texas Flood. It's the first Stevie album, Stevie Ray Vaughan in Double Trouble. And there's some great songs like Texas Flood, like Lenny is the last song. That is one of the most beautiful guitar songs. Lenny, if
in
you don't know
mile,
it.
Keep left to merge onto I-35E South.
So throughout his life, he also struggled with drugs and alcohol. And so, like I mentioned in the book that I read, gosh, I think it was talking about just the volume of cocaine that he would do would I think they had said it would have killed a normal person, and he was doing it on a daily basis. That could be a wrong description of it, but that's what I remember, is that it was some version of that he did so much that it would be more than a normal person could take. And he did it often once he got popular and once he had money to put towards it. So it starts to wreck his life. He is...
keep left to merge onto I-35E South.
I can't believe he lived through it, actually. When you see some of the photos or some of the concerts in like that Austin City Limits video that I was talking about is one instance of that. But he got out of it. He was able to get clean, and this would have been like the late 80s. He got clean. And
in 6.2 miles, keep left onto I-35E South toward Waco.
Okay. If you Google... if you Google Stevie Ray Vaughan AA testimony, there's this, he got into Alcoholics Anonymous and got clean, and gosh, you can just tell his entire life turned around. And so, there's a audio of it that somebody in the room had the foresight to record it. And he just shows up at an AA meeting and he shares his story and he talks about how he was one thing and how, I mean, he goes into how God turned his life around. He pulled him out of the depths of the thing that he was in and showed him hope and pulled him out and turned his life around. And he's just, I mean, he talks like for 15 minutes, if I remember right. And he's just talking from his heart. And it's wonderful. And so he was able to overcome those struggles, and then it was a whole new. Now this is me remembering. Oh, gotta be careful when I'm driving and podcasting at the same time. Okay, he was so overtaken that if I remember right, again, this is from a book that I read a couple years ago. But what I remember is that once he got clean, he was kind of afraid of performing again. If I remember right. Because the only way he had ever remembered performing was on some kind of substance. And he wondered if he'd still be able to do it. He wondered if he'd still have it. And you wonder that with creative people who are able to achieve incredible things when substance is around. Like, I've wondered the same thing about other creatives. Like, gosh, at some point, do you start to think, hey, it's the drugs that helped me reach this level of creativity? And for Stevie, once they went and played, if I remember right, it was the first show he did completely sober and killed it. And actually people said that his playing was better than it ever was, because it wasn't, there was no sloppiness. He was completely present and just turned around. And in the most interesting thing to watch, if you do the YouTube for the Stevie Austin City Limits 1980s performance, followed up by the, I think it's 1989, he came back on the show. He's more filled out. He's older, looks a little wiser. He's got color in his face. And he's just smiling the whole time. And he's just beaming. And you just feel like he is so grateful to have made it through it and to be able to be alive. I mean, that's what comes across to me when I watch it. And the playing is spot on. I mean, spot on. When you watch the difference between the shows. And so if you're looking for an introduction to Stevie, either one of those is a great start. I don't sit around and listen to blues records, but I like Stevie Ray Vaughan. And I don't know, part of that's probably the Texas thing. Part of it is being a guitar player, but I feel like just some people are able to put forth some part of themselves into the music in a way that you feel it, and you feel that it's from the heart. And, there's other musicians that my friends like that they feel that and I don't. And so you may not feel that for Stevie, but when I listen to it, I'm like, gosh, that is it. He's channeling something true and something good. So we're about 5 minutes out. The album that Stevie came back on and was clean on was In Step, and that ended up being his biggest album, his most popular one. He sold, gosh, I think over 15 million total albums at this point, if I looked right. But that, that album has a couple songs like Tightrope, where the songs are kind of talking about where he was at. He had, spotlight in his face, but he was looking for revenge, and it just talking about him kind of being in a dark place and walking, literally walking the tightrope of, in some ways, between life and death, in the way that he was living. And thank goodness he made it out of all of the bad possibilities of the drugs and alcohol and made it out. And he was able to tour and have an album and talk to people about how his life turned around. And so that was the upside. And so the downside was that was really, you know, he really hit his stride and was doing great and was clean. And then it was 1990 in August, and he had played at the Alpine Valley Music Theater. And there was a bunch of other people there. I think, Eric Clapton, if I remember the story right, Eric Clapton was supposed to be on the helicopter that Stevie got on, and they traded the last minute. I think it was him.
Take exit 420 toward Laureland Road, then turn left onto West Laureland Road.
Which makes you think of even like the Buddy Holly story from a couple episodes back. Hearing about him in the crash that he was in, but Stevie was on a helicopter and they crashed on August 27th.
At the light, turn left onto West Laureland Road. Then turn right into the parking lot.
1990, we're about here, and it was from what I remember. Like I said, I was still young and was just getting a guitar, but I remember being on the front page of it's the Dallas Morning News here, and just kind of a shock. And I remember even when I post about the Little Wing episode, people were saying they remember where they were when it happened. And I think in one, just recently, a guy commented on it and he was saying, he's like, I remember where I was when it happened. I had to take the day off work. I went to, what'd he say? I think he said he went to a bar and bought, filled up every single, slot with every Stevie Ray Vaughan, song and listened there. So obviously, this is somebody who made an emotional connection to a lot of people. And that's a hard thing to do for an artist. Now, as I'm talking to you right now, I'm at a stoplight. I realize I have a microphone and I've had somebody looking at me because, like you do on a Saturday, driving, talking in a microphone. All right, we're pulling in. I can see the funeral home here. It's the Laurel Land Funeral Home.
Turn right into the parking lot, then arrive at your destination.
All right, we're switching to headphone microphones because I don't want to be disrespectful. Pulling in here, there are people here for services today too, so I'm just trying to be out of the way and see if I can find this location without interrupting anybody's services. All right, I got here and did not know where to go, and I am in t-shirt and shorts. And was afraid that I was going to have to go into the main area dressed like this. So I called the lady. I said, hey, can I get that mat from you? But is it going to be disrespectful to come in? And she's like, no, come in. That's a different part of the building. So thankfully, I was able to go in. And she provided a map where we can find it. I was near it. We're going to go through the main entrance. And then they have a map here that's marked SRV. So we're going to go over there, see if we can find it. It's interesting. This is a cemetery. It's right off the highway, right off I-35, which is in, kind of near the heart of Dallas and pretty near where he would have spent a whole lot of time, certainly on 35. That's a main thoroughfare through the area. We're looking for the turn in that she was describing, and I'm pulling up to that now. And there's a map that says it curves over to the left. And we are going to see if we can find it here. Thankfully, there's a video on YouTube from someone who was here. It looks like it was 3 years ago. And they actually show you how to drive into the cemetery to find the actual plot. So I am retracing my steps to hopefully find the right road that this was on. I think I turned one too early. I'm somebody who's not great at directions, so we're just going to hope for the best here. Oh, Boulevard Estates. Yes, that was on here. Okay, so I think we are
Okay, yep. I think we're going the right way. Hopefully. And again, just trying to be respectful for anybody else who's actually having, looks like there's, I think this is it. It says Vaughn Estate. Oh, this is it. So it's off the main road and it comes to almost like a dead end. And there's an entire pavilion that's circled. And his is the only, I think, maybe there's two gravestones here. So I'm going to plug in my headphones so I'm not talking into my phone directly. Pulled the car over. I don't see any other cars around. It's almost like a big circle surrounded by rocks here in the middle of the cemetery. And it's, there's a green sign that says Vaughn Estate, which is the only way I knew it, but the main road ran right into this, which is, helpful. And there's two, oh man. There's two plots for Vaughn, and the main one is his, and it's a large rectangular plot. It's a Stephen Ray Vaughn. It's like a long granite border, and then there's like a gold surrounding area, and then like a looks like a star with light coming out of it, and it says his name real big, Stephen Ray Vaughn, October 3rd, 1954 to August 27th, 1990. It says, thank you for all the love you passed our way. There's flowers all around it, a lot of beads, like necklaces around it, and a couple guitar picks, and lots of little red hearts that have been sprinkled on it. I have a guitar pick myself, and so I'm putting my Fender guitar pick down as well to pay my respects. Whew. I didn't expect to be flooded with feelings. I mean, it makes sense that you would be, but you know, standing here, just you know, seeing somebody's proper name. It's not Stevie; it's Steven. His birthday. You imagine him being born, and then the day that he passed is actually my birthday, which is a weird thing to see on a tombstone. But you know, I'm sitting here, you know, thinking about it, and I think for me, like what comes to mind for me, and this is, you know, personal, and this is what I take from this is, you know, I turn off the microphone for a little while there, and but I said a prayer and said thank you to God for allowing somebody like Stevie Ray Vaughan to bring music to show his passion for it. That for me as a young kid, the thing that caught me was the skill and the talent, but really the passion for it, the love for it, and that's what, you know, helped me want to play guitar. And I know that's true for so many other people. So for that, you know, that's where I feel like, just as a prayer to God, that thank you for somebody like this who had passion, and that thank you that he was able to be pulled out of the struggles that he was in and see a better life after that. So I'm very grateful for that. I'm going to walk around to the other side of this circle kind of pavilion. Some flowers I'm going to pick up, put them over here. It looks like, I'm guessing these are his parents, but it's on the other side, and it says Vaughn. I'm going to be reading this upside down. It says Jimmy Lee, September 6th, 1921 to August 27th, 1986. Oh, man. I forgot about that. He died on the same day as his dad. Holy cow. I did not remember that. Oh, wow. That rings a bell now, but golly. Martha, I'm going to clean off the headstone here because I can't read it. Martha Jean, June 14th, 1928 to June
think that's 18th, 13th. I'm going to clean it off. 13th. June 13th, 2009. Wow. And then it just says Vaughn in large letters at the bottom. Wow. And it looks like, I think that's indicating they were married on January 13th, 1950. It looks like that might be what that is. As a marriage date. Huh. Gosh, he passed away on the same day as his father. How crazy is that? Walking around back. There's really nobody else around in the whole cemetery this morning. But the headstone is about, on back to Stevie's side, it's about 5 feet long and probably 3 feet wide compared to a normal headstone that's a lot smaller. So it's certainly meant as a place for people to come and pay their respects. There's large stones all around. You're able to step up onto a stone right directly in front of it. So I was able to stand there and see it. But yeah, if you're in Dallas, it's certainly worth coming by to pay your respects if that's something that you're into. Looking back at the inscription, thank you for all the love you passed our way. Now, and that's a great synopsis, because you just feel that he brought so much joy and so much joy to so many people through his music. So and his life and his life story at the end. So that's certainly worth noting as well. And even as I'm heading back to my car, I've got a text from my wife with photos of her and the kids having a fun time together. So the reminder of both death and life in them at the same time. Yeah, gosh, that was heavy. But I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I came down here. And it's certainly worthwhile. I think there's so much value in recognizing when something moves you or when someone moves you, and saying that I'm going to go to show my respects, or I'm going to acknowledge that in some way. So for me, this was certainly a meaningful way to spend a Saturday morning. And I know this is a different type episode than we normally have, but man, the things that I take away from today are remembering the impact that Stevie, that his playing had on me, that made me want to play guitar, and that really affected my life for a lot of years, because I know I've talked about it a little bit, but I played guitar for a long time. For many years after college, and playing in a band and writing songs, and it was a big part of my life, a huge part of my life. And so I'd say he certainly played a part in that, his playing as much as his passion for the music. And so many times that's what comes through to me in musicians is the passion they have for the thing, for the music. And he certainly had that, and he certainly passed that on to me in his... you could tell how much he cared about what he was doing, and he wanted people to enjoy the blues like he did. So that was good. Well, thank you for listening to the Songs of No podcast. Like I said, this is not a normal episode, and thank you for coming on a trip with me to Stevie Ray Vaughan's gravesite. And be sure and check out the episode on Stevie Ray Vaughan and Little Wing if you have not heard it. And that's it. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Songs of Note podcast. Be sure and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. See you next time.